You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Brian.
Hello, Mike.
Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be a part of this.
Brian, for the people that haven't come across you yet, introduce yourself and tell us what's going on hot right now. Why are we talking today?
I'm a hospital pharmacist. I've been working actually in a community hospital for about 7 years now. And I've seen this need that needs to be filled. I know that as guys in pharmacy, it's hard for us to take care of ourselves and work on ourselves mentally and physically. And I personally was there where I, for one, didn't really feel fit to be working in a hospital as a pharmacist. I know I need to take better care of myself. So that's what I do. I have a program where I'm working with guys to help improve their physical and mental energy so they can focus on those relationships and their careers and their personal goals.
Stop the press now, Brian, because out of the 50-some podcasts that I've done, someone is finally helping us guys out. You're a hero now. I've talked to so many people that are helping out all the damn women. And like women, I'm like, why are you helping the women? They've got 70% of the career. The jobs are nicely built around them with part-time and this and that. Now, all of the ladies that are listening now are saying, yes, Mike, but we don't have representation in the leadership and that. So I understand. But it is good to find someone that's sticking up for us guys.
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, it's not the easiest because us guys, we don't really like to listen. We don't really like the help, or we don't really know if we need the help to begin with. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's very difficult to reach that audience. And, you know, you may label, we call it a health coach. I like to think that term is kind of thrown around a little bit too much and it's undervalued because of that.
Okay.
The health coaching industry is just full of women helping women. And I saw a need where there needs to be support for the guys out there. And, you know, I know I could have used some support working on my physical and mental energy just because, you know, you're going to work every day. You're getting burnt out.
Right.
You don't really take the time to take care of yourself, right? We think it boils down to, oh, I just need to have that motivation and I don't have the time to really take care of myself. The number one thing I hear from guys that I talk to and work with is that I just don't have the time or motivation. And that's not their problem. They think that's their problem, but it's not their problem.
You say that the coaches, that term is thrown around loosely. What do you mean by that?
There are so many people out there trying to become a health coach or working on starting their business. And I, for one, believe pharmacists are positioned to be the ideal health coach.
Yeah, right.
That can really bridge that gap between conventional medicine and holistic care for patients. And yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. I believe it's undervalued because of the number of people that have gone into this industry thinking that they can just help everyone out. And I think they go in with good intentions. I just don't know if they are as trained.
There's people who have finally done their first 5K and they're labeling themselves as a health coach.
Yeah.
And to their credit, if they narrow down their niche enough of whom they're serving, they do have the ability to maybe help people who are overweight and they want to make their 5K. But the problem is that coach is thrown in with the same coach like you who's got 7 years of college and experience and this and that and pharmacy and healthcare and those kind of things. So it's probably like everybody can use the term coach, but when it's quickly seen on a screen or a business card or something, people maybe don't go into the depth of, well, yeah, but what kind of coach am I really looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, people don't buy health coaching. It's not something that I'm going to go out there and searching and I know I need a health coach, right? It's just not something we think of. Mm-hmm. We see problems, we hear stories and we resonate with those stories. And that's how you really get to know your clients and come like actually gain clients is by helping them resonate with you through your story. And recognizing that they have a problem that you went through and you could probably help them out with.
They buy solutions. Were you a fatty?
Yeah, I actually was. And I weighed about 210 pounds.
How tall are you?
5'10". We'll call it 5'10". I'm a little probably like 5'9 and a half.
Yeah, my wife doesn't let me say I'm 6 feet. I'm like 5'11 and a half, but I always say I'm 6 feet. She's like, no, you're 5'11. And it's like, what? You should be the one saying I'm like 6'1". Why is she bringing me down to 5'11"? I don't get it.
I know, right?
but now I probably truly am 5'11". So 5'10", 210. Yeah. That's pretty hefty.
It's hefty. I don't know if I'd say I was, you know, obese as much as, you know, that term is thrown around a lot too, but I definitely was overweight. I felt overweight. I did not feel my best and I did not look my best.
How far are you out of pharmacy school?
I'm several years out of pharmacy school. It all happened during pharmacy school, to be honest. You know, the stress of school itself and throwing in the parties and just, we did have a good time and they always fattened us up with pizza. I don't know why. Every single meeting had free greasy pizza, like, and not the thin crust kind either. I'm talking like the thick crust that's going to throw you into a food coma, right?
Oh, the big breaded kind. Yeah, they get that pizza in there. It's cheap and they figure students like it and it fills you up. And
yeah, but it made me fall asleep in my afternoon classes.
It did.
And that's if I was there. I mean, a lot of times I would skip classes.
Because you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Is there a national brand restaurant that puts in whole wheat crust on their pizza?
Oh, I don't know about that.
They always throw in that high white, high glycemic stuff that, yeah, you're sleeping a half hour later.
Yeah. And that took me a while to realize, like, put that combination together. Like, that's one thing. We don't really learn a lot about nutrition in school, so.
No, we don't.
I wasn't really aware of the effects and, you know, why I was so tired all the time.
Right.
Aside from the fact I was living off chicken fries and ketchup. Multiple reasons why I put on a decent amount of weight in school. Stress being the ultimate. Lack of nutrition knowledge was definitely up there.
Okay, so you put that on at school. And then what was your first job after pharmacy school?
My first job was working at a smaller hospital, and I was thrown into night shifts. I was just taking whatever shifts they would give me. And,
right,
you know, obviously throws your sleep schedule off, and I just wasn't handling it all well. I was tired all the time and, you know, always hungry. So that didn't really help either.
Then you got to come home and reward yourself after the shift.
Yeah. And then I had all this money I didn't know what to do with. So I was going out to eat more and I was going, you know, out drinking more with friends. I'm like, I got all this time. I'm only, you know, I was only 24 at the time. And,
right,
you know, I even tell people, they asked me if I did a residency. And I said, no, that was actually before residencies became almost mandatory for hospital jobs. I told them, I don't feel like I was mature enough to even do a residency at the time. And that was just me. I was just living life. I was really enjoying it and didn't bode well physically.
How long have you been out of pharmacy school now?
Just about 7 years.
7 years. When did the turnaround come and why?
2015, the turnaround happened.
One thing I know that you don't have a bunch of kids telling you that you were fat. You didn't have that.
No, I did not have that. I have a mirror, though.
That's true.
You know, I ask guys, like, what's your reminder, like, that you need to take care of yourself? And a lot of times I'll hear the answer, well, I see myself in the mirror, and it's either something I like, I look and I feel good about the way I look, or I know I need to start doing something. Or I hear the word should a lot. I should be doing something. I should be eating better. I should be working out.
There's a third option, too, of just getting rid of the damn mirror.
Well, there's that, too. You could get rid of the mirror.
Brian, I've got the gray hair and the wisdom that you don't have yet.
Yes. Yes, that is great advice.
We come up with those win-win options, like getting rid of the mirror. But if you youngsters still insist on keeping the mirror, that's where you were able to see it and see that you weren't looking back at someone that you wanted to look like.
Yeah, I just didn't feel good about myself. And that's really what it boiled down to, is I knew I wanted to feel better, not only mentally, just about the way I looked, but also physically, so I could then transition into being a husband to my now wife and a father to my now son. So I think that really all plays a big part in it. It all turned around for me with one Google search. And I say that with dead seriousness, like, one Google search changed my life. And that was, why am I always hungry in the morning?
That is something that long term, it's really hard to beat hunger because it seems to always balance out that you don't want to be hungry. And so that's always been the key to me. It's like you can try things, but if you're hungry, your body is constantly saying, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. That's always been to me. It's like, I know the answer isn't in my willpower. It's in my hunger.
Yeah.
So what did you find on that Google search?
So I came across a very interesting website by a Swedish man named Martin Berkon. And it was about the lean gains method. And that really is what introduced me to intermittent fasting. And so I got into his website. I read the articles. He's very sarcastic in his approach, but he's also very scientific. And a lot of what he wrote and I was reading made so much sense. And they talk about insulin and cortisol, if you really want to get into it, you know, stuff we learn about in school. And I thought to myself, wow, this is all really interesting. And I was just like, I found something I was really into.
Was it literally like you were looking at this when you were at your top? You're like, I got to find something to fix this.
I was not at my top weight. I had started working on, you know,
some stuff.
Yeah. And I was losing weight. It didn't feel like it was something I could maintain, right?
Because you were hungry.
That's what led me to this was I was working in the emergency room. My shift would start at 10 o'clock. So I would wake up in the morning, you know, drink a protein shake like I thought I was supposed to be doing, have some oatmeal, get to work a couple hours later, try to focus for a little bit. And next thing I know, I'm like, I feel the hunger pangs coming along. And I'm just like, I can't focus. I got to make my way back down to the pharmacy and have another snack. It wasn't really sustainable for what I needed to be doing. I didn't feel present where I needed to be present, which was at work. And I was constantly thinking about eating and going down to eat. And I know there are so many approaches to losing weight and you can eat smaller meals more frequently throughout the day.
Sure.
But that was not working for me. So I came across this method with this Google search and it literally just changed everything for me. It just opened my eyes to intermittent fasting and reading all about that. And mind you, this is all before, you know, intermittent fasting became pretty mainstream because it's a little more mainstream now.
It's mainstream the last couple years, but this is back 5 years for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 5 years ago for me, I tried it out. I thought this all makes sense scientifically. This guy makes a really good argument and let's give it a shot. So I did it. And 2 weeks later, I took before and after pictures and I thought this is incredible. I did not change what I was eating. I only changed the window of time in which I ate it. And that was it. And I saw a noticeable difference.
So I know there's 12-12 and 16-8 and 24. Where did you start and where did you end up?
I started at 8 and 16. So I would eat within roughly about 1 to 9 p.m. And I love the flexibility of it too. Once you got into it, a couple weeks in, you could just forego it on an occasion when socially you felt like you wanted to. For me, I was still young at the time. So that, you know, mainly on the weekends when I didn't really need to focus at work, I would forget about the fasting. But the irony came when I found that it benefited my life so many other ways more than just physically, that it was something I wanted to do. It wasn't just about the weight loss anymore. It was more about how much it helped me in other areas of my life. And I'm talking about the mental focus I gained at work. It was just incredible. And I thought, wow, I need to use this not only as a lifestyle, but as a tool to just become a better version of myself every single day.
Is it still 16-8 or do you throw in different time periods?
I've tried 72 hours straight. Just for the experience to be able to write about it. And it was not easy. The hardest part was smelling dinner upstairs and trying to be out in the basement.
For those listening, what we're talking with 16-8 is 16 hours of not eating, 8 hours of eating. And if you said yours was 1 to 9, it's basically shutting the fridge at night and holding off on breakfast till like 1 o'clock. I mean, that's basically the time span.
Yeah, absolutely. And it worked out. It's worked out for me at work where if it would get busier and say I couldn't leave the emergency department, I was using it to I would just extend the period of time in which until I ate, right? And you get even more and more benefit the further you go. So, like I said, it became a tool for me to perform better at my job because in the past, if I would get past 2 hours without eating, I would get like this, I would get this hunger and I would lose concentration and I'd be like, I'm not focusing on the task at hand. And and now with this as a tool by my side, I have this ability to just extend out. Like if it gets busy and I'm needed, then I can stay and help out.
And you're not like in a true carb deficient ketosis, but it gets easier because you're teaching your body after you pass some of those hunger pangs, you're teaching your body to kind of flip and use some other energy besides the quick carbs. Is that about right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're flipping that metabolic switch. You're going from more of carbohydrate burning to fat burning, and your brain actually prefers ketones over glucose. That's what really helps with that focus. And also it increases something called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's basically, think of growth hormone for your brain.
All right. So how long have you been doing this for?
Ever since, 2015, 5 years. Like I said, originally I used it to lose weight and get in better shape. Now I use it for a tool, and I call it building the foundation for that level of fitness that fits your life.
I've done it for a day. I tried it for like 2 weeks, like a year ago. I understand it all. I just didn't do it. I'd have to get a coach to tell me why.
What did you find difficult about it?
Well, there was probably only two things, not eating and starving.
Starving, that's a term we can get to, but
I could probably narrow it down to those two basics if I have to.
We all have the friends that think they need to eat or get hangry after a couple hours of not eating, and that was me. I can tell you that for the longest time.
I try now at least to do lower sugar when I can. So anything that's basically sweet is defined in my book as sugar, whether it's honey, even these highly healthy honey rolls or something like that. It's honey. It's sweet. A lot of days I'm having oatmeal and blueberries and stuff like that in the morning. A lot of carbs, but complex carbs. But the other day I treated myself to a nice big bowl of frosted mini wheats. Mm-hmm. And the first couple hours on both of them are the same. But with that mini wheat morning, man, when you're hungry, you're hungry. I mean, that drops off like you just walked off a cliff. And that's what, in the fasting, you put up with some of that for a bit, though, until your body learns to go into that at least mini ketosis.
Yeah, absolutely. You can retrain your hunger hormones when you give it enough time. And it also really helps to be eating the right things when you are fasting. You go into such a state of insulin sensitivity that if you would stick to just really high carb, highly glycemic foods with fasting, you're going to get even sharper drop in blood sugar potentially.
So you're saying, Brian, that during your 9 hours of eating, when you say you don't have to think about it, you're still trying to put in some good, sensible food. It's not time to eat cotton candy for 9 straight hours. Would that be fair?
That would be a fair statement, yes. It helps to focus on adding in, whole foods and protein-rich foods that help fill you up.
They fill you up, and you're just not thinking about food so much because you're not crashing all the time.
Yeah. It took me a while to put that together. I would have been a better student had I known about fasting because, for one, I probably wouldn't have been so tired all the time during classes because I personally just think, I myself have an issue with blood sugar stabilization, and I've experienced some low blood sugars without being a diabetic. I feel like I've had that experience where I've almost passed out or I felt really lightheaded after a meal.
Yeah.
I'm referring, of course, back to when they fed us pizza in school and I didn't have anything else besides pizza. And you're just talking, getting hit with tons of carbs at a time with nothing else in your stomach. Your blood sugar is just going to spike and then it's going to drop. Right.
So
our body perceives hunger not only as the rate at which it changes, but the amount at which it changes too. So like our blood sugar goes from like 300 to 100. Yeah. It could happen over a couple hours, or if it happens like that, then your brain's going to be like danger, danger, danger. Even though you're in a safe zone, you're still going to feel that hunger, you're going to still feel that food coma.
And you're going to feel it, and you're going to probably eat whatever walks in front of you,
yeah.
whether it's a cotton candy booth or whatever, because your body is telling you, if you don't eat this, that dropped off so much. If you don't eat this now, you'll die, which is, you know, not true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You look great. So what is your weight now?
I'm currently at 160.
160 from 210. So a solid 50 pounds. How does that feel? Is that enough for you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not trying to lose any more weight. And now I'm coming up with strategies to try to put on a little bit more weight.
You don't have all the secrets. I could tell you how to do that. The Business of Pharmacy podcast. Here's what I want to talk about. I touched on it earlier in the show, and you've chosen a rather narrow category of men who are making that transition between school and work and then maybe into fatherhood and so on. But typically that's going to be about a 7 to 10 year window. And pharmacists are an interesting bunch where I, as an independent pharmacy owner, somebody may say to me, where is your niche? You know, who is your focus? And it seems with pharmacists that we've always, I know I've always just said, well, I don't know, it's kind of hard. Our focus is anybody who's 0 to 100, who, male or female, any income level, who's sick, you know, and basically that covers everybody who could be your customer. And as time goes on, you narrow stuff down. You do the Pareto principle of where's 80% of your profit coming from and the 20% of the customers. Well, these are going to be customers who are in this district and maybe need delivery and maybe have so many meds and things like that. But it's still pretty, it's still a fairly large target. Let's talk a bit about how hard or how natural it was for you to decide that's where your niche was going to be. It wasn't going to be anybody coming out of pharmacy school. It wasn't going to be anybody who had stressors in life. For example, you could have an ad that says, there's all kinds of stress in life. It's getting into pharmacy school, and then it's getting out, and then it's finding a job, and then it's having a baby, and then it's getting married, and then it's working in a seamless, endless job, and then it's doing this, and then it's doing that. And before you know it, you could have been trying to focus your business basically on men, period. And you went for that pretty narrow niche. And tell our listeners, what went into that to decide to focus there? And if you ever question that focus?
It definitely took some self-reflection on my own personal journey and story, right? So I like to even just take it back a little bit in time when I'm in high school and I thought, you know, my dream is to be this baseball player. And, you know, I just want to play baseball. I want to play professional baseball. And then I'm at tryouts and first cuts come and I don't even make the team, right? So that right there, that moment in time for me was a low point. And from that point on, I didn't really feel good enough about who I was. And so that played, you know, that really had a huge impact on my life, which it took some time for me to realize. And this whole business venture has helped me realize it.
And that's freshman year of high school.
Yeah, freshman year of high school. And it's taken me this long to realize that how much of an impact that had on my life.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
People always talk about the great value of sports. And I'm like, what did I learn but to ride the bench here and do this there? I mean, I think my sports was terrible for me.
That definitely has some values. But for me, it really made me question my own personal worth and self-worth. And then, you know, you go through high school and you're supposed to come out knowing exactly what you want to do with life. And for me, I only chose pharmacy because both my parents are pharmacists and I look to them and I'm like, oh, well, they don't hate their lives. They seem to be doing pretty well. Let's go into pharmacy because I don't really know what I'm passionate about. And obviously, I'm not meant to be a baseball player. That's really set the stage for the rest of my career and going through school and helping me narrow down to that niche was reflecting on my own story.
Right.
Right. So to even dig a little deeper, it's helping the guys that are like me that, you know, we maybe doubt ourselves, we compare ourselves to others, we fall into that trap of self-comparison, and we don't have that foundation of sports or fitness to build off of for the rest of our lives. Like, people talk about all the time how sports is really like a huge foundation for setting you up in your personal relationships, your life as a husband, as a father.
Yeah.
Right? And not everybody has that. Not everybody excelled in sports growing up, right? I was that person. And so it's like, well, what about me? I'm just left to just hang out and dry, like feel like crap about myself or not feel good about myself.
Right.
How can I show up and still be a better pharmacist, a better husband in the future, a better father in the future, if I don't have sports to build off of, right? Played such an instrumental part in me helping me settle on the niche of guys that I feel like I can serve the best. And that's what it really boils down to, is who can I serve the best?
It hits a nerve. My wife was a decent athlete. She's always like, we should get the kids in this or that. I'm like, what? So they can ride the bench and come home and cry because they didn't get put into the game at all and stuff like that? And I think I was just saying that last week.
Yeah, my wife's a D1 athlete, and you know, you've learned so many, you know, just fundamental things about life. Like, that's what sports is, right? That's one of the things we love, how it brings people together, and we love the lessons it teaches us for life. Where does it leave you without sports?
Where does it leave you knowing that you didn't have the chops to belong in a group that's supposed to teach you all these great lessons?
Well, it left me questioning myself for sure. And just like, it honestly left me in this trap of self-comparison.
Exactly.
To all the other guys that seemed like it just came natural to them.
And right.
None of that ever came natural to me. It never came natural for me to be social. Another key thing was, in college, I wasn't naturally social. So you use the old lubricant to help with those situations. And that, you know, that all contributed to my weight gain. But,
oh, sure.
You know, bring it back to your question of where I got that idea for this narrow niche. And it's because I know myself, and I was intimidated. I felt overwhelmed. I didn't know where to start. I was asking myself all of those questions, right? Like, where would I even start with nutrition? Where would I even start with a fitness program? You know, I don't really actually want to be counting macronutrients on a daily basis or counting my calories. I really want to be able to enjoy my life.
Right.
And just not have to worry about it and just have it all become part of my routine, and it just fits in. And I don't want to be mentally having to process, how do I lose weight and keep it off for good every single day of my life?
I could see that almost leading towards more animosity towards your past of saying, wait a minute, I didn't make a team or I didn't do this. And now every day I'm trying to make up for that with macro logs and, you know, exercising to death and all this kind of stuff. And so the fact that you were able, and you're able to teach others that this is not a punishment, this is a gift.
You just bring up a huge point that I like to make, is that when we talk about all of these things we should be doing and finding the motivation, we turn shoulds into chores. Like, I should be eating right, I should be exercising. If you're doing it out of this sense that you should, you're turning it into a chore. And I don't know about you, but I hate chores, right?
Sure.
Whereas if you flip it a little bit and you look intrinsically as to why it benefits you and how it can change your life and improve it on a daily basis, physically and mentally, it turns it into a gift you can give yourself each day.
And yeah,
and that's what I like to teach people. And that's what I help them realize through my program. We do one-on-ones where we just work through the stages of, you know, what does fitness mean to you? What have you tried in the past? Like, why do you feel like you have no motivation or you have no time? And just working through defining all of that for that person, that individual. And what we get to is, you know, heightening that sense of awareness. You don't really need a motivation if you have awareness about why you're doing it.
Do you feel a need to focus this online to a particular audience, or is it more general and then people come across you, see your name, maybe word of mouth or mention it to somebody else and so on?
I've not run any advertisements. I really operate more under word of mouth at this point in time, and just working with past people in my network and guys that have come to me and just said, hey, you know, I hear about what you're doing and I, you know, let's work together. I have some weight I want to lose. You know, initially we always start with the surface level. It starts with weight they want to lose that they don't feel like that they have the motivation or time to work towards. And, you know, now that I've gotten some word of mouth, I'm ramping up my online presence. And, you know, I feel like I do better in person and in-person networking events. And obviously that's on hold right now. So that's been a challenge because I did have some, you know, presentations lined up, some of those where I'm going to go and give a talk to guys and helping them solve that problem of getting more mentally and physically fit. It's just something I've become so passionate about, and it's filled that void that pharmacy couldn't for me, where I always liked pharmacy. I was good at it. I'm good at it still. But I was never truly passionate about pharmacy. Even coming out of school, I questioned my desire to be a pharmacist. So that's what gave me that itch. It was that for me that I didn't even feel the desire to be a pharmacist. I knew there was something more I could do, and I didn't exactly know what it was at the time. But with a lot of work and introspection, it is definitely come to light now. So,
are you still working full time in the pharmacy, and anything that you're doing now with this is going to be kind of extra income and so on?
Between part time, full time, I'm about 30 hours a week, so that does free up time outside of my job to be focusing on this.
Is that 30 hours because of what you've already have built with your business, or it just happens to be the 30-hour schedule, which then ends up giving you time to focus on the business?
It just happens to be the 30-hour, and I could pick up more hours if I desired, but it's not like I've seen such a huge influx of money that I don't have to work at the hospital anymore. It's worked out where, you know, my loans are paid off now. We have relatively low monthly budget.
Yeah, and
it allows me that time to do this. You know, noticeably, I'm happier. Without finding that thing you're passionate about, you can get easily burned out if you're not feeling fulfilled.
Absolutely. Where would you like to be with this in 3 years? The question would be, if you were able to do this full time, would you not be back in the hospital? Would you be doing something with this, whether it's speaking or web stuff or whatever? Would that be a goal or not necessarily?
I don't think necessarily, because there are really aspects of my job that I enjoy. And it's about being that advocate for patients in the emergency department and in our outpatient wellness, our wellness center, that I feel called to be an advocate there as well for those people. And, you know, I wasn't fulfilled at that job for the longest time because I had this burning desire to do something outside of it. But now that I have that as well,
yeah,
it's actually helped me get more out of my current job too, and work with more purpose there than I had intended. Rather than feeling like I regret it because it's blocking me from doing something I love, I have the best of both worlds, where I'm doing something I love and now I'm doing something I love too, like where I have two things I'm doing I love.
Do you bring any of your holistic / nutrition, et cetera, into your current job, or are you just saying you're finding fulfillment with general pharmacy things?
Oh, I absolutely do. And I have had some incredible conversations with people in the emergency department where I've just had some really in-depth, incredible conversations in the emergency department and our outpatient wellness center. And I go against the grain, as you would say. I know I've helped people more because of that, because of my holistic approach. And that definitely has helped me get more out of that job, is taking what I've learned now, you know, doing my own thing, into my current role.
Do you feel the hospital knows about that and that's encouragement? Or are you like, hey, bud, let me tell you about this thing, and then you don't want anybody to hear you?
I will not mention anything about that.
You're not going to incriminate yourself?
No, I mean, I don't think I ever step out of line with what I'm telling people.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever felt that. Now, maybe in our diabetes clinic, I haven't gone by the book, literally. What I am going to do is ask them questions and genuinely listen to their problems. And that has had a huge impact. I think that is the one lesson I have learned, that, you know, if we could all just listen a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's all people really need. And that's the one lesson I've taken into my current job, is stop trying to regurgitate all my information onto these people and counseling them. Well, eat this, eat that. All they really want you to do is listen to them, and then they'll work out their own problem.
I've been doing that at the pharmacy lately. I've been working a lot more hours there because we had a lot of staff changes. And what I've been trying to do is, I don't answer the phone very much because I'm the boss and I don't have to. Years ago, my dad always tried to set a good example. I don't even have the phone ring at my spot because it's like, I'm past that. But with that said, love them or hate them, I'm taking the path that Rush Limbaugh does on his show. Some of these shows, like, let's say Dave Ramsey, who has a financial show, he'll like, you know, he pushes people right along on the phone call, you know, like, let's go and let's get these questions in and out. Rush, on the other hand, you know, he's got a 3-hour show, and I don't know, he might talk to 2 people. You know, but the people he talks to, he's like laid back and listening to them. People might differ on that, but he's taking a lot of time with like 2 calls rather than trying to fit in 20. So I found some joy in that in my later years, you know, of just having that longer conversation with people. Plus, the longer I'm talking to one person, they can't give you any more work to do, you know? It's not like they say, well, I've got a longer list, let me read you more of my list, you know? You still have the 1 or 2 things you might want to do off a phone call. You put another 20 minutes on there, that's just free time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think one thing telehealth has brought the healthcare industry is, it's probably helped doctors listen more to their patients if they are looking in a webcam, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to just, looking at a computer, I'm typing, I got my... it'd be really, really interesting to see what comes of this whole situation with telehealth.
Brian, as you begin to age and start to look more distinguished like I do with some gray hair, do you think that your base will change when you're 40 and 50? Do you think that your website will say, I'm taking men through different stages, instead of like the focus that you have now on your wonderful website, I should say, I'm taking people through the end of college and into their new job and new life and so on. Will that keep going up as you keep aging?
I'd like to think I will always be there for men at different transitions of their life and help support them through that physically, mentally. Like I said, so they feel fit for that role.
Right now it's focused on where you've lived. It is focused more on that 20 to 27-year-old time slot or whatever.
I do know I have this goal of going back and speaking with high school students about self-worth and, you know, helping them feel better about themselves. And if they don't feel like they have that passion, that thing they're passionate about, if they don't excel in sports, you know, that there's still something out there for them that they can do. And they don't have to compare themselves to others, because that's where I felt like I struggled the most, was in high school. So I know that I would like to help create programs for those kids, for those boys at that age. And I also like to think I would like to help, you know, empty nesters and help them transition into that role where they're outside of this, the role of becoming a parent. And it seems like a lot of empty nest couples, they then struggle with that identity, right, as a married couple. And I've seen marriages break apart because of that.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really cool to help, you know, guys become that supportive role to their wives and, you know, help them flip, not flip that switch from becoming a married couple to another couple.
That'll probably widen then as you go along.
I basically like to think of it as taking lessons I've learned, and that's where my program comes from. The whole thing is derived from lessons I've learned in my life, and then help teaching that to other guys and helping them go through that and getting out of it what they can.
If you could go back in time to that freshman in high school, would you say, I wish I would have made the team? Or do you say now, you know, this is God's direction and I can do this now and I can teach this and I can teach that? Do you ever go back and say, I just wish I made the damn team?
I wish I could go back and just tell them it was going to be all right at that point in time. Yeah, that 13-year-old self, just tell them, hey, you know, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Don't, you know, because, you know, I was told, this is crazy to even think about, but I was told from a young age in grade school that, you know, I was going to be a really good high school player and I was going to be, and you know, playing college most likely. And I was so talented. So to hear that from this outside input and then not have that happen was very tough, but I would like to go back and tell that version of myself, you know, right, even if you don't make the team, it's okay. Your life is going to be still great.
Yeah.
And Mike, I'd like to ask you, what, going back to yourself, you know, as a, you know, as a new pharmacist graduate, you know, taking over, or sounds like working at your, I know you work at your, took over for your father's store.
Yeah, right.
And how do you think you would have benefited from a service like this? Or where do you think, like, how do you think that would have positioned you to be at the time?
Yeah. I had some of what you had growing up with sports teams. My brothers were swimmers, and I never swam as well as they did. And you're talking a second or something off a race, but I never quite did that. But one thing that I did, and this was right after high school got done, it's right when triathlons were coming out. There was the Olympic distance, which was 0.9 mile swim, 25 mile bike, and a 6 mile run. And that was a real saving grace for me because I was able to do something that nobody could compare me to. You know, it was kind of new. It was kind of cool. It was, none of the fast people had found out about it yet, so I could place I could place a little bit higher, you know. So I think that sent me kind of on a different direction. And then I think a lot of the news stuff that I've done, being hopefully the pharmacy voice of Grand Rapids, at least, I think a lot of that came from kind of self-doubt, you know, and I used some of those kind of things to kind of like be like, yeah, it's kind of cool that I might have self-doubt, but I'm on the news and stuff. You know, it's kind of like a little ego trip for that. Happened to be good for the business, but it was also kind of an ego booster for me. And so to answer your question, Brian, I think, unless you and I are the only two lonely souls coming out of pharmacy school with a history of some not winning, let's say, I think there's a huge need for that, of helping people find their worth. Because I know even now, like, I'll listen to some singers. They could have Grammy after Grammy, but they don't have five of them like somebody else has, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that's a weird time in life, coming from high school, where the average high schooler didn't really feel like they fit in. And to have that and then go through pharmacy and stuff, I think you're hitting on a very raw need that's out there.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike. The ironic thing is, we think about health as our motivation, as like our thing that we're using for our motivation. I just want to be healthier. You hear that all the time, right?
Yeah.
As a goal, I want to be healthier. Well, that goal is so nonspecific, and it doesn't actually lead to habit change because it's so nonspecific. You know, the donut sitting in front of you on the table is going to be calling your name way more than health that you can't really perceive now. But we are creatures of instant gratification.
Yeah.
where we see that donut and we think, oh man, my health goal can wait just another day because that donut's there, or someone brought in donuts today at work. How do you take what you're doing now to apply it to your life now? How is it going to help you now? And if you think about that, if you work on that, that is where your change is going to be sustainable. And those habits you want to implement, you know, our New Year's resolutions, whatever they may be, if you think about how does it help me now? How can it help me do better now at my job? How can it improve my enjoyment of life right now?
So that donut sitting there.
Yeah.
You have two choices. You can say, I'm not going to eat that because I want to be healthy. But you're saying that there's going to be benefits of not eating that donut right now.
I like to tell people that if you can choose to eat the donut because of some higher emotional reason that's attached to it, like, for example, I'm choosing to eat donuts on Sunday because it's Mother's Day and my wife absolutely loves the donut shop down the street. So we are getting donuts. That's a very intentional eating of donuts. And I don't feel guilty. I will not feel guilty about that donut. But if I am saying I am choosing to eat the donut because I'm hangry at work and it's sitting right there and who else is going to eat it, then that's not being very intentional about eating the donut.
Yeah.
And you're likely to even feel guilty about it. That guilt is then going to manifest even more as, you know, feeling more and more tired. You're not going to get the enjoyment out of the donut that you're meant to get, right?
Yeah.
You're always going to choose the donut over health. If you become aware of what the donut then does, then, you know, you're empowered with that knowledge of, well, if I eat this donut, I'm going to probably have that blood sugar spike and feel a little bit more drowsy later on.
Yeah.
And I don't want the feeling of that. I know what that feeling is and I don't want that. And I'm not choosing to eat the donut at this point in time because of that. The benefit there, as I like to say, does not outweigh the risk.
It seems to me that it takes the coaching, it takes the focus, because especially when you're in a situation where you didn't cause the donut to be there, you're at work and the donut's there. And that's sort of like putting a mug of beer in front of an alcoholic and having it inches from his mouth. And it's like, at that point, it's no longer really a choice. So the choices have to come earlier through a lot of thought and long-term goals, not the goal of counting the calories, the goal of what does this mean for me and so on. When someone hears this and they want to learn more, how do they dabble in you? Are they going to be looking up your website, fasttofitlife.com?
That's probably the best way to get a hold of me, is going there or on LinkedIn and just reaching out, really. Because, you know, I know for me, the one thing is that question, where do I start, right? Like, that was the question I always had, is where should I even start? I don't have that foundation of fitness or athletics to really help me with that question.
Yeah.
And to empower me with that knowledge. So it can be very overwhelming to try to go in, like as I did, and follow all these Instagram people and workouts. And then you fall into that trap of comparison because they are completely jacked.
There are some benefits, though, because that's, of course, where you first came across me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, yeah.
You're saying if they're only jacked, like that's their main thing.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Just to make it clear for everybody. No, but really, you come across these people and it's like, that's not a starting point. That's an ending point.
It can be a very overwhelming and intimidating. So it's like, if you're just learning if you're just trying to figure out where should you start, it can be very tough. And like, if you think that motivation and time is what you really need, it's not really what you need. Need to know where to start.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the first thing I want to give to people that help them out is just this quiz to help bring awareness to them. I just made this quick 5-minute quiz. It applies pretty well to pharmacy and your career and how are you handling taking care of yourself with the two of those things combined.
Is that on your website or are they doing that verbally with you?
No, it's on my website. Yeah, if you sign up for the list, you can go check out any of my blogs. And I actually wrote a blog post about how to avoid the donut at work. And
that's great.
So if you were to sign up for for that, you can get that quiz. You can fill it out. Like I said, it takes literally like less than 5 minutes. You'll go through, you'll get it like a sense of awareness of where you're at, and it gives you a score, and it tells you which area of your life you really should focus on the most to help improving your mental, physical energy and ultimately taking better care of yourself so you can feel better.
Hey, Brian, really cool finding out about that niche, about how near and dear to your heart that is. The stuff that you focused on there with that goal of your soul really is cool. And I think that anybody who's going to be successful, but also very happy with that success, that sounds like a good combination to try to find that niche by something that's near and dear to your heart. So really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's been fun, Mike. Thanks for talking with me and having this conversation. I really have enjoyed it.
We'll be following. If you come across me on Instagram, just do a little shout out. I have time between some of my sets to
Do you do live workouts on Instagram and broadcast?
I haven't done as many now because I'm starting to do all the TikTok dances.
Gosh, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, quarantine has helped us get more creative, that's for sure. And so I stumbled across my old DePiro textbook, Pharmacotherapy. That book is huge, right? So
yeah,
I actually used it for a workout the other day.
Physical, not mental.
Physical workout. Yeah, I would never read that book again.
Did you do like a step up and down or curls?
Combination of both, really. I mean, you can go on my Instagram and watch it if you want. I had some people message me and say they tried it, and it wasn't the easiest, but you do like some side lunges, you do some like curls and shoulder presses. It's got a good bulk to it. It's about like, you know, 4 or 5 inches thick.
I ain't no genius, but when you get to be my age, you think a little smarter than you young guys. I'm going to do that with the Kindle edition. All right, Brian, keep it up. We'll be following.
All right. Appreciate it, Mike. Take it easy.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.